from deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I've been thinking. First of all, I'm proud to say that through no machinations of my own, it's not the last time you'll hear that word today, by the way, through no machinations of my own, this broadcast is now occurs almost as frequently as the daily newspaper in New Orleans. Just a nutty thing that happened. But I've been thinking about what was discussed in this program last week, the new parking meter system in the home of the homeless, home of the Rubber Promise, Santa Monica. I'm informed that a similar system has been put into place in San Francisco. I'm not sure of that, but that's just idle information. But for those of you who weren't listening last week, it's a system whereby the meter now knows who you are. That is to say, who your car is, what the license number of your car is. This is kind of who you are in California anyway. And so even though you've paid for 25 minutes, when you pull out, the next guy who comes along, let's say you only parked there for 20 minutes, you pull out 20 minutes into your 25-minute time, the meter goes back to zero. The next guy goes in, starts from zero. That's an innovation. City is going to make more money that way. Could open whorehouses, but no, they decided to do this. Now, it just started me thinking about what is it, what is the transaction? You know, if you're paying for 25 minutes and you don't use your 25 minutes, you use almost all of your 25 minutes, it's almost, I'm going to use words that may sound unfamiliar to people in most parts of the country, it's almost like an act of community to share what you haven't used with the next person along. You know? It's like if you buy a newspaper in a Starbucks and you read most of it, but you don't read all of it, but you leave the section that you didn't read behind for the next person. You leave the whole paper behind for the next person who comes along. It's as if a newspaper owner tried to prohibit you from doing that. No, that could never happen. They're not that stupid. So what is it you're paying for? You're not paying for the time. If you're paying for the time and you don't use all of it and you can't share it with somebody, shouldn't you be able to get it refunded, the unused portion? Shouldn't Santa Monica owe you for the 5 minutes you didn't park there? Because they're going to get the money anyway from the next person. Oh, I see. They're double dipping. That'll solve it. Just open a poker palace and be done with it, won't you? Hello, welcome to the show.
I'm 3 times 7 and I do as a doggone please. There ain't no woman this side of heaven gonna get me on my knees. I'm 3 times 7 gals and that makes 21. Lord, I just won't tame, I'm gonna be the same till I'm 3 times 21. I make my living a loafing and I ain't never worked a day. Working and me just can't agree, I reckon I ain't built that way. I'm a rootin' tootin' rounder gal, now don't you think I ain't. I might get around to paintin' the town, but I never did like to paint. Cause I'm 3 times 7, and I do as a doggone please. No pretty thing this side of heaven gonna get me on my knees. Yes, I'm 3 times 7, that makes 21. I just won't tame, I'm gonna be the same till I'm 3 times 21. I'm a trifling troublemaker, and I really feel my oats. I ain't afraid of no big man or of any old gunny totes. I'm the big duck in the puddle,
And don't you try to push me around, boy. I didn't come in like no lion, just to go out like a lamb. I'm 3 times 7, and I do as a doggone please. There ain't nobody beside ahead gonna get me on my knees. I'm 3 times 7, and that makes 21. I'm wild and woolly and full of fleas. I'm an old good son of a gun.
From the edge of America.
We're in the middle of the desert.
We're in the middle of the desert.
No, we're right by the ocean, but thanks, Spike and Rachel. From the edge of America, from the home of the Rubber Promise, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And we start off with news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole Jr. Promises at the Olympics would prompt a massive rise in people taking up sports in the UK have been left in tatters thanks to government cuts and the economic crisis, according to an academic working for the British government. The number of people regularly taking part in sports has flatlined since 2008. So the government has abandoned its target of 1 million more people in the country playing sports by 2013. Chris Grattan, professor of sports economics at Sheffield University, says he believes a failure to invest in campaigning is key to the failure of the Games to affect participation. The money hasn't been there to invest in policies that create more participation, he says. When their government cuts, that's not going to happen. You're not seeing adverts on television saying, it's the Olympics this year, do more sport. If you really want that effect, that's what you need to do. But that's not what's happening. The economy is also to blame, according to Professor Grattan, who submitted his study to Sport England. People's incomes have been frozen for 3 years and in real terms have gone down. We thought we'd have a more active population. If we'd had the sort of economic times we had between 2000 and 2008, we probably would have. Boosting the number of people actively playing sports was central to London's Olympic bid. Shortly after winning it, the government pledged to get 1 million more adults playing sports by 2013. Only 4 out of 23 funded sports had an increase in participants between 2007 and 2011. It's a very clear drop-off from the levels achieved in 2007-2008, said Professor Grattan. Expensive sports suffer the most. Skiing, sailing, and golf. Tim Lamb, chief executive of Sport and Recreation Alliance, which represents community sports clubs across Britain, says there's no question the original participation targets were a stretch. But there was a reason for that. That was the organizers that promised the IOC was what we would achieve. The defining feature of our bid was the legacy of participation the London Games would create, and that was what won us the right to host the Games, unquote. The Sport and Recreation Alliance believes restrictions on the Olympic logo are making it hard for local sports clubs to tap into enthusiasm. The Olympic rings are so well protected it is next to impossible for a grassroots club to associate itself with 2012, said Lamb. That makes it difficult for communities to feel like the Games are actually reaching their doorstep. And the BBC has learned that nearly a third of the Olympics tickets, which went on sale earlier this month, remained unsold. London 2012 organizers had expected that the 928,000 tickets would all be snapped up quickly by eager buyers, but that has not proved to be the case. There are still more than 20 sessions with availability for sports like boxing, basketball, beach volleyball, and weightlifting. In total, there are nearly 300,000 tickets remaining on sale. That's in addition to the more than 1 million football tickets, soccer to you, which are left. For the first time since London 2012 tickets went on sale last year, there is now a genuine prospect, says the BBC, of the Games not selling out. BBC, by the way, is broadcasting the Games. They have no interest in slagging them. Demand was so high last year with 22 million tickets applied for that it seemed an inevitability that every ticket would be sold. Ticketing, though, has turned out to be the greatest challenge for for 2012 organizers. There have been a number of problems with the website, which is run by Ticketmaster. Some people last summer even having to be informed that they had not been successful in buying the tickets which they had originally been told that they had got. Many others were frustrated by the ballot process, which left more than a million applications empty-handed after the first round of sales. A London 2012 spokesman refused to be downhearted about the slow sales since tickets were made available again on May 11th.
We have delivered on our promise to give those people who missed out last year another opportunity to buy tickets. And thousands did.
And thousands did not. The influx of visitors set to hit London for the Olympics has raised concerns the transport system cannot handle the extra weight. This is according to RT, the Russian broadcaster. During London's Olympic bid, the transport system was the element that scored most poorly with the IOC. But it was thought the city would have time to modernize its infrastructure ahead of the Games. However, the threat of a strike... Yeah, there's been a lot of that. However, the threat of a strike from London bus drivers could bring the city to a halt. Over 20,000 bus drivers are currently voting on whether or not to take strike action during the Olympics. Bus drivers have appealed to London's transport office for a $790 pay raise during the Games to cope with the massive increase in workload. If London's buses do come to a standstill because of a strike action, the city will come to be gridlocked. Nothing will move, said the leader of the union. Over 800,000 extra passengers are expected to use London buses while the Games are on. Transport for London denied the request on the basis that bus drivers are employed by a number of different firms. Both train and underground subway workers will be receiving hundreds of pounds of bonus pay during the Olympics. So the lesson is, don't be a bus driver. If the strike does come into force, it will put massive strain on London's other transport services, forcing 6 million people to squeeze onto the London Underground in the summer. That's an Olympic event. It's a movement, unless you're trying to move. The Olympics. It is a movement. And we all need one. Every day! Yeah, all right. I know you modulate. Ladies and gentlemen, news of the godly. As the last prosecution witness in the Philadelphia priest sex abuse trial took the stand this week, the jury... I'm going to slow down now, was told about an Archdiocese of Philadelphia document turned over to prosecutors. That document suggested the late Cardinal Anthony Bevilacqua and other Pennsylvania bishops formed an ad hoc committee to, quote, better protect from civil law discovery, unquote, secret archive files of priests with a history of problems, including of allegations of sexually abusing minors. The Catholic Archdiocese of Philadelphia kept sensitive personnel files in secret archives, trial witnesses have testified. The document the jurors were shown this week was the only mention of that committee. So we don't really know. But it's secret. Because that's the way God wants it. God wants it to be secret. The Legion of Christ religious order, already discredited for concealing the crimes of its pedophile founder, suffered another blow to its credibility this week after its superior admitted he knew in 2005 that his most prominent priest had fathered a child, yet allowed him to keep teaching and preaching about morality. The admission by the Reverend Alvaro Corcuera is likely to enrage members of the Legion and its lay branch, who have endured years of apologies, hypocrisy, and explanations for the crimes of the order's founder, the Reverend Marcial Maciel, who sexually abused his seminarians and fathered three children with two women. The Reverend Thomas Williams, the public face of the Legion of Christ in America, admitted last week he had violated his vow of celibacy and fathered a child several years ago, going public with a statement after the AP presented the Legion with the accusation. On Tuesday this week, Corcuera wrote a letter to all Legion members admitting he'd heard rumors of the child before he became superior 7 years ago, but he took Williams' word that they were false. Williams, the public face of the Legion, is a well-known U.S. television personality, it says here, author and moral theologian. Corcuera said after becoming superior in 2005, he confirmed Williams' paternity and asked him to withdraw from public ministry. Yet he did nothing to prevent him from teaching morality to seminarians or preaching about ethics on television. Or stopping writing any of his 14 books, including, quote, Knowing Right from Wrong, A Christian Guide to Conscience. He's on television. A County Meath nun has quit the Catholic, this is in Ireland, has quit the Catholic Church and formed a new religious group to in protested years of mental, sexual, and physical abuse at the hands of priests. The Drogheda Independent reports that nun Mother Maria Francesca has given up on Rome and joined the Ecumenical Catholic Church in Liverpool. That church allows married priests and women priests. She told the paper she cannot, quote, stay silent anymore on the bullying, sexual, and physical abuse she and others, she's a nun, had suffered at the hands of Catholic priests. Only the hands? A member of this, Mother Francesca said she defended the Catholic Church to the hilt in the past, but I can no longer stay silent on the abuse I have suffered and witnessed or the fact that the Vatican imposes rules I simply cannot follow. Use the godly, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature in this broadcast. News of AFAC. Here is a clue as you hear the talking heads in Washington in the wake of the summit in Chicago talking about the situation in Afghanistan. Even the New York Times today catches up with the story of how the opium trade is flourishing and is going to flourish more once we start the slow skedaddle, because we won't be dumping tons of money into Afghanistan, which means that opium money looking pretty good now. But here is, because he's in opposition right now, his government, if he were in government, he'd be doing exactly the same thing. But he's in opposition over in England. So Ed Miliband, leader of the British Labour Party, says, the international community must up its game on finding a political solution in Afghanistan or risk wasting a decade of sacrifice by British soldiers. He visited troops in Helmand province on Friday, says he fears the country would slip back into being a failed state when combat troops are withdrawn in 2014. Despite giving his backing to the planned withdrawal date, reaffirmed at the NATO summit in Chicago, he says there was, quote, a long way to go, unquote. There's a clue, ladies and gentlemen. There's a clue right there for your listening pleasure. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Dayline Littleton, New Hampshire. Republican New Hampshire legislator has apologized for calling a former state GOP official who endorsed his political rival a stripper and pole dancer. The outburst at a GOP picnic over the weekend in Goffstown, New Hampshire, targeted Pam Manny, a grandmother of four and former vice chairwoman of the state party. State Representative John Heichel berated her in front of about 20 people at a hot dog tent, promoting his rival in the upcoming GOP primary. Manny, who supported his rival, said Heichel repeatedly and falsely accused her of being a former exotic dancer after hearing that misinformation from another state Republican representative. He goes, stripper, are you a stripper? You were once a stripper, Manny told Reuters. I said, I want to let everyone know it's not true. I've never been a pole dancer. I looked at John and said, you should be ashamed of yourself. Heichel left a message on Manny's home answering machine on Monday night in which he apologized and said the incident had been eating at him all day. Seniors at Mesquite High School in the Dallas-Fort Worth area will have to wait to pick up their yearbooks because of two errors in the publication. Some of the special needs students in a section recognizing them were labeled mentally retarded. The school also did not have parental permission to publish their photos. The high school noticed the errors on Friday while it was distributing the yearbook. School administrators are apologizing for the errors. It was not meant to disparage anyone in any way, district spokeswoman Laura Jobe said. It was just an error that was overlooked and got printed, unfortunately. The school collected all the yearbooks with errors and sent them back for reprinting. Jobe said the school apologized to the parents of the students in the section with errors. Call all the MRs, parents, and tell... Deadline New Delhi, about 350 London-based passengers aboard a British Airways flight had to sit for hours inside the plane before takeoff due to a technical snag on Friday. The flight was rescheduled for Saturday, but it could not take off and is now scheduled for a Sunday departure. Today's Sunday. On Saturday, the flight was rescheduled as the fault could not be rectified completely. In a statement late in the evening, British Airways apologized for the inconvenience. Passengers had to wait for hours before they were provided hotel accommodations. Now, that sounds like British. That sounds like all airlines these days. Germany's Medical Association has adopted a declaration apologizing for sadistic experiments and other actions of doctors under the Nazis. In the statement adopted earlier this week in Nuremberg, the association said many doctors under the Nazis were, quote, guilty, contrary to their mission to heal, of scores of human rights violations, and we ask the forgiveness of their victims, living and deceased, and of their descendants, unquote. In addition to performing pseudo-scientific experiments on concentration camp inmates, German doctors also were key to the Nazi program of forced sterilization or euthanasia of the mentally ill or others deemed unworthy of life. Death panels. Professional wrestling. Am I actually going to read this? No. Giving no publicity to professional wrestling, even their apology. Let them pay for it. Deadline New Orleans, Ochsner Health System's outgoing CEO is apologizing for making what some are now calling racially insensitive remarks about smoking. The comments appeared in Health Leaders Media, a national business publication. Dr. Patrick Quinlan was interviewed for the first anniversary of the hospital group becoming a tobacco-free workplace. The article quoted Quinlan as saying, quote, none of my friends spoke, but studies clearly show that the poorer you are, the more you smoke, the blacker you are, the more you smoke, unquote. It's unfortunate that one sentence was taken to mean something it didn't, but the facts behind them are true, says Quinlan. He now says what he meant to say is the tobacco industry has targeted groups successfully to get them addicted and stay addicted to tobacco, and people who are most disadvantaged suffer disproportionately from smoking. He regrets his choice of words in the magazine article. It's my job not to trigger people's reactions, but to get them to stay open and think. In that case, he says, I failed. His exit as CEO, not sped up by his remarks, he says, that's been in the works for about 18 months. Boy, these people who spent a long time on their jobs planning to leave. After days of ridicule for launching a conspiracy theory-fueled investigation into Barack Obama's birth certificate, Arizona's Secretary of State Ken Bennett this week backed off his threat to keep the president off the ballot and apologized to his state. Not to the president, to his state. See what I'm saying? If I embarrassed the state, I apologize, but that certainly wasn't my intent, Bennett said in an interview with Phoenix radio station KTAR. He'll be on the ballot as long as he fills out the same paperwork and does the same things that everybody else has. Unquote. Here's a soundbite for you. And from the LBJ School, the Lyndon B. Johnson School of Public Affairs, an apology tweeted this week. Quote, our deepest apologies to our 2012 graduates for the egregious typo in our program. We are working to distribute corrected programs. That's from Susan Binford, Assistant Dean for Communications. The typo consisted of calling the School of Public Affairs, as the program was printed, the Lyndon B. Johnson School of Public Affairs. I'm not making this up. Obviously, says Binford, we are mortified. It's beyond embarrassing. The program went through lots of layers of approval, she said, without anybody catching the error. As soon as we realized the mistake, everybody went into overdrive, and we went to work to reprint it. All grads will be sent new copies of the program. Graduates have already received apology letters from the dean, along with the apology tweet which spells egregious incorrectly. And now they've corrected that. They've corrected their tweet. The dean says her biggest fear is the typo getting mentioned on The Daily Show. Oh, I see. You're not afraid of this show. Well, you want to talk about Beyond Embarrassing at the Lyndon B. Johnson School of Pubic Affairs? Here's Lyndon B. Johnson.
Go ahead, sir.
Hello.
Hello.
Mr. Hager?
Yes, this is Joe Hager.
Joe, is your father the one that makes clothes?
Yes, sir. We're all together.
You all made me some real lightweight slacks that he just made up on his own, sent to me 3 or 4 months ago. It's a kind of a light brown and a light green, rather soft green and soft brown.
Yes,
and they're real lightweight. Now, I need about 6 pairs for summer wear.
Yes, sir.
I want a couple, maybe 3 of the light brown, kind of a almost powder color, like powder on a lady's face.
Yes,
then there was some green, and then maybe some other light pair. If you had a blue in that or black, I'd have 1 blue and 1 black. I need about 6 pairs to wear around in the evening when I come in from work.
Yes,
and I need they're about 1/2 inch too tight in the waist.
Do you recall the exact size? I just wanted to be sure we get them right for you.
No, I don't know. You all just guessed at them, I think, son. But wouldn't you have the measurements there?
We'll find them for you.
I can send you a pair. I want them 1/2 inch larger in the waist than they were before, except I want 2 or 3 inches of stuff left back in there so I can take them up. I vary 10 or 15 pounds a month.
All right.
Now, the pockets, when you sit down in the chair, the knife and your money comes out, so I need it at least 1 inch in the pockets.
Be fine.
Yeah. Now, another thing, the crotch down where your nuts hang is always a little too tight. So when you make them up, give me 1 inch that I can let out there because they cut me. It's just like riding a wire fence. These are almost, these are the best that I've had anywhere in the United States. But when I gain a little weight, they cut me under there. So, leave me, you never do have much margin there. Let's see if you can't leave me about 1 inch from where the zipper ends, round under my, back to my bunghole.
All right, then.
So I can let it out there if I need to. Now, be sure you got the best zippers in them. These are good that I have. And if you get those to me, I would sure be grateful.
Where would you like to stand, please?
White House.
From the Lyndon B. Johnson School of Bunghole Affairs. Oh, I'm not supposed to push that button? Okay.
There's more pretty girls than one. More pretty girls. Every old town that I rambled around, there's more pretty girls than one. Mama talked to me last night. She gave me some good advice. She said, son, you'd better quit this old rambling all around and marry you a sweet little wife. Down that old lonesome road, hang down your pretty head and cry, 'cause I'm thinking all about them pretty little gals and hoping that I'll never die. There's more pretty girls than one. There's more pretty girls than one. Every old town that I pretty girls than one.
How do you feel about it, Merle?
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Le Show. The situation in regarding the J.P. Morgan trade, I guess it would, you'd call it, run by the London office. You know notice how two major stories going on, the Nice Corp story and the J.P. Morgan story, both involve people in New York. We didn't understand what was going on in London. We didn't supervise. That was the London office. Okay, so the London office that was Chief Investment Office, I think it was called, which was set up to hedge risks. I know, it gets very, very complex. Anyway, the trader there, Bruno Ixel, known as the London Whale because of the size of his bets. These were basically bets. Jamie Dimon, the head of J.P. Morgan, in explaining all of this, used a term that, according to people I read in the economics profession, is made up. An economic hedge. That is to say, it's hedging against risks somewhere. Because hedging is supposed to be against a specific, okay, we made this loan, now we're going to hedge against, or we bought this option, we're going to hedge against it. This was just like a general. Now, one of the theories floating around is that it became necessary to do this large amount of gambling, which, by the way, was very profitable for a little while, which is why it went on. The need for that level of profit was caused by the fact that J.P. Morgan had bought up WaMu, that failed bank that had zillions of dollars worth of toxic, crappy home loans. So, hey, go make some money somehow. The head of the London office, Ina Drew, resigned, I think this week. And rumors are rife that Bruno Ixel, the London Whale who made the trades in question that have gone bluey, now it's about a $3 billion loss so far. But who's counting? That he's going to resign too. It all seems so complex, and yet we have ways of understanding misbehavior with regard to banks.
Ixel and Drew were quite a combination. Their financial machination ruled the London office morning and night. Their complex calculations dwarfed the wealth of nations, making the boss man smile. Late one night, an algorithm popped in their head. It just meant dodging some steel load rules and leave the competition for dead. Ixel and Drew, craftier than gators, they got the regulators with their savvy pattern. All of the while, they were getting frisky, things were growing risky on their big account. One CDO and a CDO squared, that's how you start. It's not a hedge, but it's on the edge, and it's so damn smart. They used to rake in the millions, and no one knew what they did. But now they're playing for billions. All of a sudden they're looking as dazed as a red-faced kid. All of a sudden they're looking as dazed as a red-faced kid. As if he heard from Simple Simon, Mr. Jamie Dimon turned his reapers on. Ixel and Drew lost their reputations, took renewed stations, they were gone.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Yes, we can. A massive slab of floating ice that juts from Antarctica's west coast could be in hot water soon. Warm ocean currents threaten to sneak up from below and torpedo the ice in coming decades. Researchers report in a issue of Nature, the degradation of the historically stable Filchner-Ron ice shelf would upset ice on land, triggering runaway melting over a vast region of the continent and accelerating global sea level rise. The loss of this ice shelf would be catastrophic, says Ian Jocelyn, a glaciologist at the University of Washington. We could be looking at tens of centimeters or even meters of sea level rise. The finding is in stark contrast to recent research suggesting that sea level rise due to the melting of Greenland's glaciers may fall short of worst-case scenarios. We need to start paying attention to this area of the West Antarctic ice sheet, which so far has been ignored, says a physical geographer with Earth and Space Research in Corvallis, Oregon, Lawrence Padman. And the last 60 years have been the hottest in Australasia for a millennium and cannot be explained by natural causes, according to a new report by scientists that supports the case for a reduction in man-made carbon emissions. In the first major study of its kind in the region, scientists at the University of Melbourne, not Melbourne, used natural data from 27 that's Florida, 27 climate indicators, including tree rings. Buy your tree a nice ring, won't you? Corals and ice cores to map temperature trends over the past 1,000 years. Our study revealed that recent warming in a 1,000-year context is highly unusual and cannot be explained by natural factors alone, suggesting a strong influence of human-caused climate change in the Australasian region, says the study's lead researcher, Dr. Joel Jurgis. The climate reconstruction was done in 3,000 different ways and concluded with 95% accuracy that no other period in the past 1,000 years matched or exceeded post-1950 warming in Australia. The study was published in the Journal of Climate. What do they know? As part of the study, climate modelers used the natural data to analyze the impact of both natural events like volcanoes in the pre-industrial era and the impact of human-induced climate change. The model showed that prior to 1850, there were not any long-term trends and temperature variations were likely to be caused by natural variability, which is a random process. But the modeling showed 20th century warming significantly exceeds the amplitude of natural variability and demonstrates that the recent warming experience in Australia is unprecedented within the context of the last millennium. News of the warm. Ladies and gentlemen, copyright feature in this broadcast. In case you're wondering who's deciding who gets killed by the United States these days, you know, because we now can do that, the drones and the things, the AP reports White House counterterror chief John Brennan has seized the lead in choosing which people we think are terrorists will be targeted for drone attacks or raids, establishing a new procedure for both military and CIA targets. The effort concentrates power over the use of lethal U.S. force outside war zones within one small team at the White House. That's got to be good, right? The process, which is about a month old, means Brennan's staff consults with state and other agencies as to who should go on the target list, making the Pentagon's role less relevant. It gives him input earlier in the process before making final recommendations to the president. Officials outside the White House expressed concerns that drawing more of the decision-making process to Brennan's office could turn it into a pseudo-military headquarters, entrusting the fate of targets to a small number of senior officials. Some of the officials carrying out the policy are leery of, quote, how easy it has become to kill someone, one said. Recall Attorney General Holder saying a couple months ago, due process. We got due process. The Constitution doesn't guarantee judicial process. It's a process.
It's a process. It's a process. It's a process. It's a process that makes some folks' hair look as if straight's the way it grew. It's a process that makes old school food become a product that's brand new. It's a process that transforms words into a malleable digital stoop. It's a process that turns raw recruits into the proud and the few. You don't need to draw O's and X's when the star player knows what to do. A judge is just wretched excess when process time comes due. It's a process. Just a process. Such a process. Nothing but a process. It's a process that turns pigs into bacon, ham, and chops. It's a process that makes 3D magic from some extras and some props. It's a process that takes week-old milk and makes something close to cheese. It's a process that lets your debit card pay for drinks and DVDs. You can photograph a sky so gray and process it so it looks so blue. A judge is just not worth his pay when process time comes due. It's a process. Just a process. Such a process. Nothing but a process. It's a process that a server tries to slide beneath your door. It's a process that turns cellulose into a kind of hardwood floor. You know, processing made mortgages AAA instead of C. Processing let Frank Sinatra do a duet with Kenny G. You can process a Freedom of Info request so that nothing can get through. A judge dissolves in the acid test when process time comes due. It's a process. It's a process. It's a process. Just a process. Just a process. Just a process. Such a process. Such a process. Such a process. Such a process. Nothing but a process. 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 It's a process. And here's the good news for you. Your process time is due.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet. Save, save, too safe to meet.
They can't kill me.
No, they can't kill you, Addy.
Because I'm an atom.
That's right. Dateline Mainz, Germany. Catastrophic nuclear accidents such as Chernobyl and Fukushima are more likely to happen than previously assumed. That's the good news from German researchers. Scientists at the Max Planck Institute for Chemistry in Mainz have calculated that given the operating hours of all civil nuclear reactors...
Well, they're all civil. They're very well-behaved.
Yeah. And the number of nuclear meltdowns that have occurred to date, such disasters may occur once every 10 to 20 years. Set your calendars. That figure is based on the number of reactors operational in the world and is 200 times higher than previous estimates, according to the Institute. In the event of such a major accident, the researchers said radioactive material would be spread over an area of more than 500 miles away from the reactor. If a single meltdown were to occur in Western Europe, around 28 million people, on average, would be affected by radioactive contamination, the researchers said. In southern Asia, due to the dense populations, a major nuclear accident there would affect 34 million people. In the eastern United States, 14 to 21 million. So, don't worry about it. Power production at the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station in Plymouth, Massachusetts, was halted this week when a condenser at the station lost vacuum pressure during a cleaning, forcing operators to shut down the entire plant.
Why clean it? That's what I keep saying.
I know. Operators shut down the plant, which was operating at about 30% power at the time. According to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, plant operators initiated a manual scram, which involves the control room operators inserting all the control rods into the reactor core to halt the fissioning process. NRC inspectors at the plant did not identify any safety concerns or performance issues, said the spokesperson. They will follow the company's efforts to troubleshoot the cause of the loss of condenser vacuum and any corrective actions. You know that the head of the NRC was forced out this week. A lot of politics there. Not really our concern, but politics is so fascinating these days. But anyway, he's gone. Meanwhile, on a related subject, German solar power plants.
No, no, don't. This is the nuclear segment.
I know. Produced a world record 22 gigawatts of electricity per hour, equal to 20 nuclear power stations at full capacity through the midday hours on Friday and Saturday, the head of a new renewable energy think tank has said. Told Reuters that. The German government decided to abandon nuclear power after Fuch. You're just, what are you, making a salute of some sort?
Yeah. It's my little joke.
An Adam saluting. You got to see that, ladies and gentlemen. They will be replaced by renewable energy sources, such as wind, solar, and biomass. The 22 gigawatts of solar power per hour fed into the national grid met nearly 50% of the nation's midday electricity needs. Never before anywhere has a country produced as much photovoltaic electricity, said Norbert Alnoch of the Institute of Renewable Energy Industry. Germany came close to the 20 gigawatt mark a few times in recent weeks, but this was the first time we made it over. The record-breaking amount of solar power shows one of the world's leading industrial nations was able to meet a third of its electricity needs on a workday Friday. Germany has nearly as much installed solar power generation capacity as the rest of the world combined. Gets about 4% of its overall electricity needs from the sun.
That's not enough.
All right, thank you. Clean, cheap, too safe to meter, our friend the Atom. If you're having some confusion, ladies and gentlemen, about what's going on in Europe, Greece and Germany, Spain and Italy, Ireland, the euro. It is, it's pretty complex. The whole European project started after World War II as a way to ensure that the continent would not again be riven by disastrous warfare, and the premise was, well, let's bring these countries together. What's happened in the interim has been interesting. The chances of encountering any one of 36 species of farmland birds in Europe are stunningly low. Devastating declines in their numbers have seen overall populations drop from 600 million to 300 million just since 1980, according to a study published, reported on by The Guardian. A 50% reduction, and it's blamed on major changes in farming policies enforced by the European Union over the last three decades. In order to boost food production, the wholesale ripping up of hedgerows, draining of wetlands, sound familiar, and plowing over of meadows has robbed farmland birds of their homes and food. Numbers have crashed as a result, according to the Pan-European Common Bird Monitoring Scheme. Now, so the European Union, originally the common market, was one way to bring the countries together. Another way was the common currency, the euro, which may be fracturing under the pressure of Greece. And a third way of bringing Europe together was the European Broadcasting Union, the EBU. Now, it was supposed to share television across borders, which almost never happens these days, except for once a year. The most watched non-sports television event in the world, the Eurovision Song Contest. It took on an interesting political cast this year because it was broadcast from Baku, Azerbaijan, because the Azerbaijani contestant won last year. Demonstrations have been broken up in the streets. It's a repressive, authoritarian government, is the Azerbaijani government. They bulldozed homes, confiscated homes to build the big, sparkling new concert hall where the Eurovision Song Contest took place. And the ruling family kind of had a finger in the pie of the contracting deals for the the new concert hall and these shiny new office buildings that they dressed up the downtown with. Imagine that. But if you want to understand just how screwed up Europe is at this point in time, no better way than to hear just highlights of the Eurovision Song Contest, because, ladies and gentlemen, this is the sound of Europe.
Europe, let the Eurovision Song Contest begin!
Trumpet makes you my girl. You have never been to my show. You've never seen before how looks the trumpet. Europe, ladies and gentlemen, for your listening pleasure. And now, tales of airport security. Randy writes, "Hello, Harry. I thought of your show when I saw something last week that left me in total amazement. I occasionally ride the Metrolinx line to and from downtown L.A. Among the regular stops is something called Burbank Airport Station, which is nothing more than a concrete slab alongside where the train pulls up without even so much as one awning. In fact, the only two things at all breaking up the monotony are a ticket machine and a metal bench. Well, I guess since the stop has the word airport in its name, it has assigned a TSA guard to protect the slab. Anyway, here's the detail that made me think of your show. As the train pulls in, I happen to be sitting up high next to a window looking directly down onto the lone bench, upon which sat a slumbering TSA guard listening to an iPod or similar device. He was resting at so extreme an angle that it appeared he was about to fall off the bench. Disturbingly, his holstered handgun stuck out way off his hip at an angle so ridiculously away from the direction of the rest of him, the rest of him was slowly slipping, that anyone happening along could easily relieve him of the weapon. As the train began to pull away, I continued to take in the sight. And the last detail I focused on was the patch on the sleeve of this gentleman's uniform, which featured a logo and the words, U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Tales of Airport Security. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And yes, I know, they also arrested the Pope's butler this week. And there's a series of leaks called VatiLeaks has revealed alleged corruption, mismanagement, and internal conflict within the Vatican. The Pope's got a personal butler. That's right. And the head of the Vatican Bank also resigned this week. So maybe there's a job opening at J.P. Morgan. In fact, I know there is. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the East Coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.490 megahertz shortwave, on the Money 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available as a free podcast through kcrw.com or iTunes, and available for your smartphone through stitcher.com. And it'd be just like being able to bequeath my remaining time on my parking meter to you. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you already? Thank you very much. Uh-huh. A typical show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. And thanks for all the great music to Doc Watson. This broadcast is on Twitter. Join the almost 63,000 followers, or flowers, or flowers, at The Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the Rubber Promise.